It's a time of change in China, including the news this week that the Communist Party is poised to change the constitution so that President Xi Jinping can rule indefinitely. A lot of change is happening among China's millennial generation as well. Zach Dykewald has written about that in a new book called Young China. Dykewald is a 27-year-old American who studied in Hong Kong and now splits his time between New York and China. Zach, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Well, great to have you. And one of the reasons we're so happy to have you is because there are so many people in this country who are trying to have a better understanding of China. And I find that one of the biggest hurdles is that many of us do not speak the language. You decided to learn the language in China. What kind of a difference did that make in your ability to understand what was going on in the country?
Well, it's night and day. You know, if you're not able to communicate with people, you're not able to really get at the heart of their concerns. My goal or my idea of fluency was that if one of my friends was in crisis, was in a breakup, they would call me first and I'd be able to understand and console them. And then the next day, if I have to talk about nuclear deterrence because things are going off in North Korea, I'd be able to have that conversation too. It's absolutely essential to being able to understand and converse and gain legitimacy while you're there.
How difficult was it for you to learn the language?
It's a tough language. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but it's also extremely rewarding. Because it's so difficult, there aren't a lot of people who make it over sort of the advanced hump. And so everywhere I went, my language abilities was my key into people's homes, was my key into people's hearts. People would talk to me about their dreams, their aspirations, what keeps them up at night. Without the language, I wouldn't have been able to access even a fraction of that.
Well, and to give people an idea of the difficulty of the language, you mention in this book a poem called The Lion Eating Poet in the Stone Den. Just first of all, read a little bit of that.
Yeah, of course. So it's a classic poem, and it goes, shi, 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 shi.
And these are all different words, right?
Right. They're all different words. So if you look at it on the page, it's clear that they're all different words, but they all have the same phoneme base with a different tone. So Chinese is a tonal language, has four tones. And so pitching your voice in a different direction will have an entirely different meaning. So the lion eating poet in the stone den is all communicated with the phoneme base of shi.
Well, good for you for learning how to do that. Now, we talk about the language. You focus in this book on young people in China. You've spoken to a lot of them. You spoke to people in your apartment complex or on the train or at restaurants. And one of the things that people brought up to you was that they were feeling pressure because they were the only children in their family. Of course, China has had the one-child policy for so long. But tell us a little bit about that and why people see that as a negative.
Sure. This young generation faces what people are calling the 4-2-1 crisis. What that means is there's four grandparents for every two parents for every one child. Now, it used to be in around 1950 that there were a lot of young people and not very many old people. The average life expectancy was 36. So you didn't get old, you just died. Because of a longevity revolution and because this young generation was the first generation born under the single child policy, China's sort of demographic pyramid has inverted. So now you have very few young people and an aging population. And now a lot of people interpret that to mean, wow, this young generation must get so much attention. But along with that attention comes an enormous amount of pressure. Pressure to get ahead, pressure to get into a good college, pressure to get a great job, pressure to get married. So all of the attention that used to be dispersed to maybe 5 or 6 kids per family, which was the average in 1950, now it's all focused on that one child. So we call them little emperors, but for China's little emperors, heavy hangs the head that wears the crown.
And they resent
tough existence.
They resent being thought of in that way as little emperors.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you look at how gritty this young generation is, how much time and effort they put into their study, to getting ahead, to seeking opportunities, to being a responsible child to their parents, it is anything but a cushy lifestyle and upbringing.
You mentioned marriage and pressure to get married. What is it that Chinese millennials want out of marriage? Is it anything different than what people want in the West?
You know, China doesn't have religion, but it does have family. And so the pressure put on these kids, both men and women, but, you know, people my age in China, I'm born in 1990, to get married is it's more than just, boy, that would be nice. We'll have something to tell the neighbor. in order to be a good person in China, they often sort of combine that with the idea of xiaoshun. Xiaoshun translates to filial piety. It's a poor translation because we would never use that in an everyday conversation here. But being good to your parents is an absolutely essential part of being a good person. And a large part of being a good child is having the next generation, ushering in the next generation. So getting married young, forming a family young, that's more the coming of age than turning 18, turning 21. It's an essential part of growing up in China. And becoming a grandparent in China is an essential part of growing old.
Is that strong family bond changing, or is that the way it's always been?
It's being put under tremendous pressure now. I often say this young generation is sort of at the fault line of two great tectonic plates. On one side, you have tradition, what it's meant to be Chinese for, you know, thousands of years. They have a strong, proud history. On the other side, you have the pressures of modernity. What does that mean? So for young women, for example, they're told that you have to get an education in this day and age, that you have to get a higher education, and that you shouldn't be dating because you need to be focusing on your studies. So you're in school till you're like 24, 25, and then bam, whiplash, you need to get ready to find a partner. Otherwise, by the age of 27, now it's getting pushed back to 30, you're considered shengnu, or a leftover woman. It means you're considered inedible by society. So that there's this traditional idea, which is get married, form a household. But then there's the pressures of what it means to be a person in today, which means you have to be educated in order to get a job. You have to continue to, you know, most families, both the mother and the father are continuing to work. So there's the conflict of tradition and modernity that makes this, you know, I call them the restless generation. They're extremely aspirational, but there is tremendous amount of pressure sort of deciding what it means to be Chinese in the modern world.
Is there a Chinese approach to entrepreneurship that you think is different than here in the U.S.?
There's a really gutsy entrepreneurship movement in China right now. You're seeing a lot of young people, even those who are getting educated in the United States right now, wanting to go back to China because the opportunities feel so large. So in China, they'll say pinming, which means to put one's life on the line, putting their life on the line for success. There's a saying amongst the startup community in China. It's 996. That means they're working from 9 in the morning to 9 at night, 6 days a week. And that's just normal there.
At one point, you said you spoke with 100 Chinese people and asked them what their religion was. And most of them said money.
You know, they said it half jokingly, but there's enough truth to it. And there was a certain sadness with the response. You know, I would follow up with the questioning, obviously, and so much of the last 35 years, 37 years, 38 years of China's sort of post-reform and opening existence, so post-Mao existence, has been a move from rags to riches. You know, someone my age in China has witnessed such tremendous economic change. So I'm born in 1990. In the United States, I've watched our per capita GDP increase by 2.5 times. Really remarkable. Someone the same age as me in China has watched their per capita GDP increase 25 times. They remember the rags, and they've watched their country push towards riches. And with that, inevitably comes an overfocus on money and materialism. But this young generation is starting to react to that. They're not just asking subsistence questions. How am I going to get enough food? How do I provide shelter? And then, you know, the extension of that comes posturing with brands and materialism. They're now asking, what do I stand for? What do I believe in? What do I want for myself, my family, my country? They're identity questions.
And how do they feel about their government?
You know, it's a tricky question, but by and large, the opinion is their government is effective. Flawed, but effective. This young generation has had more experience of the outside world than any other generation in Chinese history. Their parents grew up behind a cultural wall without a view of the outside. This young generation grew up with the internet. They read our news. They watch our TV shows.
Some of it. They can't read the New York Times, for example. They can't go to Google.
Exactly. But more of it than you'd expect. You know, I have friends in China who quote Barney from How I Met Your Mother and Martin Luther King Jr. in the same breath. They're more fluent in our culture than we imagine. And like I said, there's so many exchange students here from China. There's 1 in 3 students studying in the United States are from China. So they have up-close experience with the United States. And a lot of that experience has led them to believe that, you know what, no government is perfect, but ours gets things done.
What was the biggest surprise for you about China?
the word freedom was on the lips of pretty much every young person I talked to. You know, sometimes it was tattooed on their bodies. It was, I have a friend who literally would write it on his ceiling so that it would be the last thing he would see before he goes to sleep and the first thing he would see every morning. And what I was most surprised by was that the freedom that they describe wanting is not freedom from an oppressive, restrictive government, as we so often expect, but rather freedom from an oppressive and restrictive set of cultural traditions. Again, these expectations about what a good life should look like that are informed by history but can't really play out in the modern world quite the way their parents expect. So it's that tension, the want to live the life that they imagine for themselves without feeling restricted by the ideas their parents and grandparents have of what they ought to be.
That's Zach Dykewald, whose book is called Young China, How the Restless Generation Will Change Their Country and the World. Very interesting. Zach, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeremy.